Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I love the idea of having a lottery tournament where teams are competing for draft picks, basically.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I would really watch that.
It would be more watched than whatever round of the playoffs it was going up against, as long as it wasn't the finals. I mean, like, let's say you got a boring Eastern and Western Conference final, but you've got Memphis versus New Orleans.
No, you're not including Phoenix in this. You're missing the team here.
Okay.
LeBron James Lakers going up against whoever.
Devin Booker.
Yeah, Devin Booker's sons for the rights to Zion.
Devin Booker has sons already? I know. Sorry.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
From all of our intra-show NBA drama to all of the college basketball results that have made headlines in these last several days, to the Chiefs entering free agency and eventually draft mode, to the Royals starting spring training, I honestly don't know what deserves to be the first topic of conversation with our next guest, Harold Kuntz of Fox 4, joining us now. You can see him, of course, on Fox 4 here in Kansas City, Channel 4, and follow him on Twitter at Harold R. Kuntz 3. Harold, I don't know where your sports cast is leading off tonight or what is exactly the headline for now. I guess probably Mizzou, since they had a game that they actually won tonight. That's pretty big news.
Yeah, since they won tonight. it's funny. On the post game, they were basically saying how much, we knew we were in NCAA tournament. We knew we were there. I'm like, well, hey, you know, they always say they don't watch this stuff, so did you? And then two, you'd lost four of the past five. Now we know, you know, Jeremiah Tillman, their five, essentially wasn't in two of those games because he was dealing with a death in the family. But, I mean, you do have to know that, hey, you want to be playing your best basketball going into it. The SEC is not necessarily a great conference outside of, Alabama. And, we just saw Alabama in the Big 12 SEC clash. Or challenge, I should say. They lost to Oklahoma without their two best players, and Oklahoma's middle of the pack of the Big 12. So I don't like to compare conferences, but you look at the top in that league and you look at the Big 12's depth, and you see Mizzou, and shouldn't really be in the middle the way they are. They just kind of, self-inflicted wound themselves won a lot of road games in the SEC, because who wants to travel to Mississippi on Wednesday? So it's a lot of going on for them, but now they're... You win a game in Florida. That's obviously the crowds are what they are, 20-30% crowd. But you still win a game in Florida. You got to travel essentially halfway across the country to get a good win over a good team. Things are going in the right direction for them.
One of the things that I've just been so fascinated by is just how the various local teams have all digested their seasons this year. And I'm specifically taking on the microcosm of Twitter, which I know is not actually representative of, fan bases as a whole, but I can't help myself, where KU fans got to a point where this season was just absolutely on fire at the beginning, and now everything's absolutely firing on all cylinders. Mizzou was complaining about not getting enough respect, and then now there's just been sort of this collapse, and obviously, again, a nice step tonight holding on to that game, which was by no means locked up until it all hit zero. But and then K-State fans, I feel like, have mostly just kind of gotten quiet and just... They're waiting for better days, which is probably the best strategy. But what have you thought about how KU and Mizzou have ended up kind of having these opposite season trajectories, and that both of them will obviously now be in the NCAA tournament, and obviously KU's riding a little better momentum at this point?
Yeah, that's just the ebb and flow of any basketball season. I mean, you can look at any level, and you're going to have some ebbs and flows. You're going to be playing your best basketball sometimes. Sometimes you're not going to be playing your best basketball because teams just figure you out. If you're in a Power 5 league like the Big 12 and SEC are, they have good coaches. They're going to figure out some weaknesses in your lineup eventually. It's how you adjust to the adjustment. And that's the biggest key about basketball, is adjusting to the adjustment. We see that in football sometimes, but it's a lot of times it's basketball, because you'll see teams go through runs. I mean, it can't be something as simple as, like, say, and take the NBA with the Lakers. The adjustment is Anthony Davis is not playing.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no interior right now. But then, you know, you look at Mizzou, some teams kind of took advantage of the fact that, you know, they didn't shoot well from three. So let's get a little more aggressive with our interior defense. Let's kind of pack line it a little bit or something of that nature and let them shoot threes. And if they can't hit them, then advantage us. I mean, Florida still shot 58% in this basketball game tonight compared to 46% for Mizzou. The fact of the matter is they turned the ball over 18 times, and they couldn't get an offensive rebound or life dependent upon it, whereas Mizzou could. And when you get to a tournament where sometimes those games are not going to be pretty, it's just a matter of who can win the game, you're going to have to do the dirty things like rebound, win 50-50 balls, and a lot of times you do that more on the road than you do at home because you take home for advantage instead of a road game. So, ebb and flow of basketball. You saw KU, Bill Self himself saying, what, they sucked for three weeks, basically?
Yes.
And now they're playing good basketball. Look, you figure out your rotations. You figure out what lineup works best in certain situations. And it's the teams who figure that out when you're 20 to 25 games into the season who usually play well in postseason. Then you see other teams that kind of top off and don't make that adjustment to the adjustment. We're seeing both Mizzou and KU both make good quality adjustments to the adjustments, or in Mizzou's case, kind of a kick in the rear because they got seniors on their team that should know better. Whereas KU, Bill Self is once again proving that he can make good adjustments and then adjust to when people adjust to them. Hence why they're going to be probably a 3 or 4 seed in a very difficult Big 12.
I'll just keep shifting through sports at this point because we've gotten distracted by NBA things over the course of the show tonight. There was an incredible stat that I did. Did you see the story about Terry Bradshaw's surgery back in the day?
Tom Brady, yeah.
Under the pseudonym of Tom Brady. That ended up distracting us over the first 20 minutes of the show, because that's about the most bunk. If anyone wasn't listening earlier, I'll reset it real quick. Here's the gist of it. This is a story from 1983. Terry Bradshaw had surgery. He had a pseudonym in the hospital, which is a pretty common practice at the time. His alias was Thomas Brady. So there's a headline that says, Steelers, quote-unquote, Tom Brady, undergoes arm surgery. That's just about the most bonkers thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah. I mean, you said it, man. It's certain things you just can't believe they're true.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, yep, that's true. I mean, now, do we give did Terry Bradshaw have talks with Bill Belichick saying, you might want to get this guy because I believe he's going to be good because I named myself after that after I got injured one time.
It's
Who knows?
Great question.
Speculation's great, huh?
it just doesn't seem possible. Like Matt Derrick had tweeted, the only way I'd be more surprised by something today is if I found out that Joe Montana had elbow surgery in 1984 under the pseudonym Patrick Mahomes. Like it's literally that kind of bonkers. But that's happened, and then we've also got all the things going on with spring training at this point now. The Royals obviously had that trade a little bit ago for Andrew Benintendi. Last night we get the news that Jarrod Dyson is coming back. What's caught your eye from what we've seen from the Royals so far, very, very, very early in spring training?
I think the biggest thing to me is that they have a lineup and a rotation this year. I mean, I don't know if you heard what Merrifield basically said about slow starts. He's like, well, you know, Hunter Dozier's healthy and Salvador Perez can see, and we have like more than two starting pitchers, and like, all right, we're going to be on fire. Now, I'm sure he's kind of a little bit insane that in jest, but at the same time, we're like, okay, look, for the first time in at least 2 years, this team comes in with like, okay, I know who the starting pitchers are. I have a very good idea of, who 1 through 5 is going to stack up. I have an idea of who the lineup's going to be. I know a leadoff person. I probably know some 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hitters. It's like, okay, it's starting to, like, piece together. Like, I know what's going to happen. So it's like, all right, now go out there and play. And if you don't, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, like, the last 2 years, you've been watching a team that couldn't even piece it together.
Yeah.
And now you're like, okay. At least we know what type of product we're watching. Like, when you go to the ballpark, it's like, I know that lineup. I know that pitcher who's pitching today. So it's amazing how a professional baseball club can get to that point, but that's where they were. And now they are a team that you're like, okay, I know these guys that are coming in. Like, I know the relief pitchers that are coming in, like the Wade Davis, Greg Hollis, Josh Domoth of the world. Like, I know these people. Like, so... And it's not, and it doesn't feel like it's just like a stopgap either.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see the future. Like, it's funny, if you look on social media, who's the person that people talk about the most? It's Bobby Witt.
Yes.
He's not even going to see the field this year, most likely, in a Royals uniform, unless they just toward the end just say, you know what, here you go, kid, here's 12 games.
Yeah.
So at least you have something to look forward to in the 2022 and 23 season, so there's more interest. And, you know, like, people are pushing to watch preseason or spring training games now.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're like, okay, well, we got to adjust and now put more games on TV. I mean, we got 11 minutes and 30 seconds of highlights from the Royals for today's White Sox.
Jeez. Wasn't that game only six innings? Was that the entire game?
Yeah, exactly. Good. Six innings. So goodness. It's like, okay, I guess they got the message has been received. I was like, oh, people actually want to kind of watch this, which they've got to be more than thrilled about, because for the last 2-3 years, they haven't had that experience.
Yeah.
So now they're like, okay, there's an interest. All right, here we go. Let's watch some guys play.
I think that's a really good take on it. The thing that I find interesting, even kind of building on top of that, is that you're right. We do know pretty much what the lineup's going to look like, what the rotation's going to look like, what the bullpen's even going to look like. But also, I feel like a lot of people are still relatively they have tempered expectations in terms of what they might actually be able to do in terms of actual winning in 2021, which I think makes sense because, you know, we know who's going to be in that lineup. We also know that it probably isn't going to be a playoff roster, but also it's kind of an unusual spot to be in where we do know the makeup of this team and expectations have not rocketed it up. Do you think that maybe that should end up bringing on a little more optimism, or do you think that kind of the a little bit below 500, kind of 500 range is probably about right?
Yeah, I think whatever analytical, the Cora system, and then there's some other analytical system, mm-hmm. put them at 71, 72 wins. I think they're about right. You know, that's a great over-under to have. Now, if you can get the 75, even 80, then, I mean, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that exceeds all expectations. Now, if you get the 60, then, of course, that's very disappointing. And it's disappointing for them. But, you know, the big word they've been using all offseason, really, since spring training started, is buzz.
Mm.
And, you know, they've been saying buzz over and over and over again to the point where you're like, okay, I get it. You know, everybody's optimist in the spring. You know, hope springs eternal. We get that. But there's a certain reason why Hunter Dozier said, like, this is the best part. This is the best ball club I think I've ever been a part of. Because it's like, okay, we have a, like, maybe not the Minnesotas and the Chicagos of the world, but, like, okay, Cleveland and Detroit, they have a real opportunity here to be like, okay, we might take them for a couple games here. You know, we get the right matchup with a pitcher and a good three-game series. We might be able to take the White Sox 2 out of 3. We might be able to take the Twins 2 out of 3. You know, take advantage of their park. It's a good mix of speed. I mean, and power hitting. I mean, you had Carlos Santana, Salvador Perez, and Jorge Soler, and then you mix that up with Ben Attendee and Whit Merrifield and Alberto Mondesi. He's, you know, fully healthy and 100%. I mean, that's three guys with good speed and three guys with power. And then you hope that, you know, guys like Nicky Lopez and some of the others out there can round into form. So it's looking like a good situation. It's just like, it's looking better. At least on, like, and again, when you look at paper, when you look at the lineup card, you're like, okay, I can compare this. You know,
yeah.
This isn't like, okay, what is this guy doing out here this year? You know, like, now it's like, okay, this is a professional lineup.
Yeah.
I'll just go out there and be professional. Sometimes it's harder than not.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there have been so many times as of late where you find, like, those holes in the lineup. Like, we were talking to David Leske about this. Well, we talked to him earlier tonight, but this particular part, we talked to him a couple of weeks ago about this, because he did a whole thing of trying to optimize the lineup. And you know, you end up having a lineup that looks like Merrifield, Mondesi, Salvi, Santana, Soler, Ben Attendee, Dozier, Taylor, Lopez. Like, 1 through 7, at least, has a Major League Baseball player in that spot. Like, I don't know if the ceiling is going to be super high for the lineup unless maybe you get the breakout year from Hunter Dozier. Maybe you get sort of more second half of last year Mondesi. Maybe you get Ben Attendee and Santana looking more like their 2019 selves than their 2020 selves. But at the very least, that is a professional lineup of major league hitters that should be fun to watch and also, like, is relevant for the future, right? Like, it's not like they've just brought in a whole bunch of veterans that aren't going to be here and we're all just still wasting time until all the guys in the farm system end up coming up. Like, it should be both interesting in the short term and hopefully, I would say, pay off in the long term.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to see that. I mean, you're only getting limited fans anyway, mm-hmm. so you're probably going to get roughly like the 22% like the Chiefs are doing. So, I mean, you know you can get 8,500 butts in the seats, but do you get 8,500 butts in the seats that are entertained and involved in the process? And not just and I mean, I hate to say this, the stereotype baseball crowds, but you don't get your grandma out there with the score sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's always been there since a single A base. Like, you got to generate some interest. I mean, like, it's a two professional sports team market, three, with Sporting KC, but two that play in the same area. And one is, like, the absolute highest power of the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one's, like, the lower end. You know,
yeah.
Like, it's you know, you got to generate some excitement there. And I understand, like, there's financial difficulties, even though John Sherman has shown that he's opened up the checkbook at least a little bit by getting in a Benetton. He's 26 years old. You can't really factor in last season because he was playing with broken ribs. You know, Carlos Santana didn't have the greatest year last year, but, you know, he said he's better with a full season. So until now, all he can do is take his word upon it that he thinks that he's better with a full season. And then, you know, you get Whit Merrifield. You know you're getting out of him. And it's just that 7-8-9. Can they progress? You know, like, you know, I'm looking at a guy like Nicky Lopez. Can he progress? Can Hunter Dozier, you know, like, we think he's a good player. He was rewarded like a good player this week.
Yep.
So, you know, go out there and show it. You know, they think he can. They're confident in him. So it's just really a matter of, like, just going out there and proving it. And but I think the biggest thing, they got to prove it to themselves. You know, because, again, you get off to a 2-10, 3-13 start like they had the last couple of years, and really, honestly, since take away the World Series years and maybe the year before and after it, they've always gotten off to a slow start. The last thing that can happen to a team that has any confidence is you start 2-13, and next thing you know, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Season's over.
So, I mean,
yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's like, well, I mean, it's not necessarily season over, but you get the feeling when you go to the stadium that the people that are watching you think it's over.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Then you just have your kind of the people in your own locker room and your own clubhouse, and that's what you want to prevent.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, they're sharing a parking lot, and one of these teams is trying to create some excitement. One of them is the most exciting thing in all of sports, perhaps. And you know, that's been reflected even just in this show. We're probably going to do 50% Chiefs, 50% everything else, even through the entire offseason. And we're getting really close to free agency opening and the start of the new league year and all of that. The draft's still a little bit away. But has anything struck your eye so far in terms of what free agency might look like? Also, now having to look through the scope of what we heard from Brett Veach on Monday, where he said that Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz are both on track to return in time for training camp. And right now, did you buy that from Veach? And I guess how surprised were you to hear, especially on Fisher, who I don't think anybody really had that timeline on?
Well, I think, you know, when Sam Mellinger asked that follow-up question,
it was,
like, you could just tell by the voice, and I don't know if you're watching, the look of his face.
Yep.
Like, he's like, I have multiple questions on exactly where this is coming from. And then he starts Googling. You could just see, like, you knew you could have watched him doing it, but you could just see him, like, Googling on his phone, WebMD or something like that.
Yes.
You knew it was happening.
Yes.
And then, you know, Brett Veach is like, yeah, let me check my notes. Rick Burkholz, you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, it's like, now, others that propose, really, it's more so, okay, does that mean he just finished the building and he's ready to do some workouts and lifting and some jogging and all that good stuff? But, and yes, I called it jogging. And Mitchell Schwartz, I'm like, okay, there's back spasms, but what's to say it's not going to pop up again?
Yeah.
You know, like, look, my father had back spasms and he was wearing a back brace for 10, 15 years. Now, granted, you know, my father was never a professional athlete and it started when he was 55. But the point is, it can last for a long time. So it just depends upon how the human body reacts. Now, Eric Fisher could, you know, be a cyborg here and, you know, his Achilles, you know, just magically gets together. But, I mean, we've seen it over and over again. Like, look at people who tear ACLs. and they recover very quickly, but they're just not the same mentally.
Yeah.
So where are you there mentally? Like, where's the trust level? You can do so many exercises, but when you get in the game situation, where's that trust level? And that's the biggest thing they got to figure out. But again, you need that depth in the offensive line. I mean, Brett Veach was pretty revealing.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like, he was very much more revealing than you would expect from, you know, kind of the organizational type.
Yeah.
And he gave away a lot. And yeah. I mean, like, look, O-line, D-line, linebacker, we know where we're getting at. You know that, especially the line, is something they're going to get at. You know that, and we've already seen it with Golden Tate being on the market and a couple other guys just today being on the market. J.J. Watt, obviously, being to the Cardinals. We're seeing that there's going to be a lot of quality players on the market. You have the way now to use with this one-year salary cap short season, salary cap less season. Do you try to go out and get one of those guys and give them the Patrick prices I've been calling it? Makes sense.
It's really
good. And
then
also, yeah. It's like, do you give them the Patrick price or do you give them, do you say, like, okay, we just need to develop somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, he essentially dismissed Sammy Watkins. Like,
yeah.
He really did. Like, he's just like, when you say, like, yeah, we're really excited about the development of Byron Pringles, like, did Byron Pringles just become the three? Like, did he just become the three? Like, or did he become a four with the idea that they're drafting a guy and they're getting a veteran in? And they're hoping, he basically, like, gave us the puzzle pieces to the point where, like, we got a real shot at figuring out what the moves are here. And it'll all make sense when you see the draft, I'm sure, in April, when you're like, okay, that I see where he's getting at, or I see where that is. So it was revealing. It was just like, you're listening to him, and it was like, all right, like, that was the first time I was like, wow, every question came forth with an answer that is like, that can be used.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, well, you know, put your words to action now, bud. So it was pretty fascinating.
I will take any excuse possible to bring up this stat because you mentioned both Sammy Watkins and Byron Pringle as something that was brought to my attention by Matt Derrick on this show on Monday. Byron Pringle and Sammy Watkins are the same age, and that just seems impossible. I know that Sammy Watkins has been in the league forever because he came out super young, and Byron Pringle's been kind of the young developmental guy for a while now. But some of the timelines we do on players like that, just I am consistently amazed by stats like that one.
Oh, it's usage. I mean, look where Sammy Watkins was when he was drafted.
Yep.
You know, coming out of Clemson, a stud, and then look where Byron Pringle was, kind of a not even really well known even in the Big 12. I mean, you knew him if you followed Big 12 closely, you knew about him. I mean, like, you know, I was in Oklahoma before this, so I knew about Byron Pringle the same way. But you know, like. You knew about Tyler Lockett a lot more at K-State. So, and Lockett, to his credit, has proved it in the NFL. Then you look at Byron, you're like, okay, this is going to be a developing process, but has he gone to the point where it's like, all right, now we're ready to throw more at you. You've earned trust. Excuse me. You got to earn trust to one guy on that team. We all know who that is. And it's not Andy. Mm-hmm. You got to earn trust to number 15 when you're on because you're on the field with him. And if Patrick's saying, I think we can trust this guy. It's like, okay, then we move forward. You know, so it's like, because Chiefs do something that is very unique that a lot of other teams don't seem to want to do. And I'm looking at Houston, and I'm looking at Dallas, and I'm looking at San Francisco, and I'm looking at Chicago, and I'm looking at a couple other places. They listen to their quarterback.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I don't know why that seems to be a very hard thing for people to do, but like they listen to their quarterback. Houston should have been like, all right, let's listen to what Deshaun Watson has to say.
Yep.
And now they don't, and now they're in a huge quagmire. And Arizona's essentially the Texans now. The Chiefs, like, you go back to that when they talked to Clyde, when they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Mm-hmm.
Beach said that he proposed three people to him, and he said Clyde. I was like, yep, I was thinking the same thing, and so was Andy. But see, holy triangle, it's got to work.
Yeah.
GM, coach, quarterback, it's got to work. It doesn't work, then you got problems. And that's what they do. But they listen to him. They're like, hey, Patrick needs this. Because if there's one thing Patrick Mahomes proved in the Super Bowl, even in a performance where he had 49 and two interceptions and no touchdowns, he proved that it's like, okay, that guy, give him the help.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
He says it needs to be filled, it needs to be filled. So, you know, like, God bless him for chasing around Sterling Sky right now. That's priority number one. I don't care what anybody says, that's priority number one for him right now, and it'll probably be priority number one for him forever. But at the same time, just be like, he goes to Brett, and he goes to Andy, he's like, I might want this. You listen to him. Very simple concept.
If Sterling gets a little too aggressive, you know, whenever she's up and running around, get him. The Chiefs need to provide some, you know, nanny help. Protect, keep her away from his ankles. You gotta keep the franchise safe. With that in mind, like if everything runs through Mahomes, everything runs through the offense, I feel like that is honestly one of the best places to start any conversation about what the Chiefs should be doing with let's say, the majority of their free agent budget, whatever that ends up being, with whoever they re-sign with the majority of their top-end draft picks. Right now, what's your inclination in terms of if they try to go get one high-priced free agent and early on in the draft, what are you feeling right now in terms of sort of like positional importance? Is it across the line? Is it pass catcher somewhere? Would you go to the defense? What are you thinking as of right now?
There's two big priorities, and they're both on the offensive end. That's wide receiver and offensive line. Mm. Those are your top two priorities. You might want to point the defensive line to get somebody opposite Frank Clark, try to alleviate some hassle for Chris Jones there. But, again, quarterback-driven league.
Yep.
You know, like, I see a shift in the NFL way of thinking that's kind of reminds me a little bit of the NBA. If you got a star player, you kind of listen to what they want. If LeBron James says he needs this, you get what LeBron James needs. Or LeBron James will get what LeBron James needs.
Yep.
So, now, obviously, salary cap and structures are completely different in both sports because they've got a huge luxury tax that makes it almost feel like baseball, whereas football does not.
Mm-hmm.
But you go to I'll do the last answer. You go to Pat, and you say, like, all right, what do you need? Now, I personally think it's wide receiver. I think you need somebody there more than anything because you're looking at a situation where, like, Tyreek Hill is clear number one, but McColl, he's got to develop. He's got to develop, and he's working on it. Like, you know, like, there's so many people that bash McColl and Hardman. Like, I keep telling myself, and I keep telling them, it's like, all right, one, you try to go out there and do it, but two, you think he's not working on it?
Mm-hmm.
like no professional player goes home and says, well, I didn't. Apparently, the pundits think I'm not doing it right, so I guess I'm not doing it right. Mm-hmm. No, keep working on it. But you perfect your craft. That's what they do. That's why they're paid. They do professional sports. You're not. And even better, then if you take their word that Byron Pringle is going to be moved up, it's like, all right, this is a perfect opportunity in a great wide receiver class. Like if you follow college football recently, Alabama's got like four receivers alone that can be drafted.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you know, like Ohio State's got three or four guys that can be drafted that are receivers. You know, Clemson's developing. Like, they're literally growing great wide receivers out of trees because with the running back position being a little bit devalued now, and you've got guys that could be running backs, they shift to what? They shift to defensive end now, or they shift to receiver, or even tight end. So you've got great value there.
Yeah.
And, like, you've seen so many rookies get in. Justin Jefferson, look at the amazing year he had. He was 22nd pick. And I'm convinced that Jalen Reagor would have had a decent year if he had a quarterback and who had a throw to him. Here's looking at you, Carson Wentz. you have guys who can find value. I could go to a mock draft right now and just look at the receiver and like, that guy's going to be good. That guy's going to be good. And Brett Veach has an interesting situation on his hand because he's a first-round pick that's late. Do you want to use an offensive tackle there? No, because look at a lot of the offensive, except for Aaron Fisher, look at the other offensive linemen he's got.
Mm-hmm.
They're late-round guys.
Yep.
And they just developed him. You get Andy Heck with him, he's just like, all right, start developing. You know, like, there's only so many fill-ins that you get, you know, when Eric Fisher went out. And then you're stuck with Steven Wisniewski, who filled in admirably last year, but then you quickly realized, well, there's a reason the Steelers let go of him.
Yep.
And then, you know, you had Austin Ryder, but you also had Daniel Kilgore in there, but you had two true centers and not anybody that could do anything. Mike Remmers has been on eight teams.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason he's been on 18s. Not to say he's not bad, but there's a reason he's been on 18s. So that's what you were dealing with. You were dealing with like Charles Barkley plays that game. Who's that guy? Because he doesn't know the guy on the Hornets bench. Like, that's what you were dealing with.
Yep.
You know, and as much as they thought the good game, like their confidence kind of got knocked a little bit by the fact that they thought, like, okay, well, we know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. And it's like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers said, politely, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so, like, that, like, no one wants to go off of one game. Like, you can't be prisoner at a moment off of one game. Like, they still got through the Bills lineup pretty solid like that. They got through Cleveland pretty solid like that. You know, we thought Matt Milano, might be, like, the big world changer in that game. He wasn't. They took care of him. We thought Myles Garrett might do something. He wasn't. They dealt with him. They faced the Saints defensive line. Sure, he got hit, but they still 432. They faced that same Bucs defensive line, and they blew him up in the first quarter. But what we really didn't look at was the other three quarters where Todd Bowles just made a quick change of, like, I don't know, double-team Tyreek Hill, and then it was like, oh, that's what we're going to play him too bad. And we never really focused on that, and it just proved itself on, you know, the first Sunday of – or the second Sunday of February. So, yeah, you can't be prisoner in the moment, but you have to look at the depth in that and what you trust in that office. And I, personally, I think there's so much depth in wide receiver. You go to the receiver – you go to the well for an NFL draft for receiver, and then you pick up a veteran offensive lineman. That's what you do.
Hey,
yeah, that's my humble opinion.
It's a blueprint that I've got very few issues with, if any at all. I will say that I got distracted by the end at the end there because I just looked at Twitter and someone was tweeting about the Detroit style Pizza Hut pizza that we've seen commercials for. And Beards has tried it, and what is alarming to me right now, you've seen this commercial many times over, I have to imagine, because it's airing during every sporting event. The picture on Twitter looks absolutely nothing like the commercial, which shouldn't shock me, but really does, because it looks pretty rough in the photo on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, you gotta stick with chicken wings, man. This is chicken wing season.
Stick with chicken ones. This is a chicken family here, almost entirely sports. So you won't get any pushback from us. Thank you, Harold. Always wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for making some time for us tonight, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, Josh. Take care, man.
Harold Kuntz of Fox 4. Follow him on Twitter. Follow the man on Twitter. He's got. I was going through his timeline before he was on with us tonight, and this dude's just. He's got everything. Like, if there is a thing happening sports relevant in the area, Harold's got something on it. Follow him on Twitter at Harold R. Kuntz 3, and watch him on Fox 4, right here in Kansas City, Channel 4. That is implied. It's also a Fox station. I don't know if that was clear by it being called Fox 4, but it's Channel 4 and also a Fox station. Pretty good work by me. Let's take a break. Whenever we come back, I got some sound from TNT, NBA's postgame, the NBA on TNT postgame show last night after Suns Lakers, which is relevant to my interests. It is mostly about Nikola Jokic, so it's relevant to Rudy's interest, and it's super awkward and uncomfortable, which is relevant to Beards' interest. We'll play that sound whenever we come back.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Let me ask you a question. Yep. Come postseason time, who do you want? You want Blake Griffin or you want Melo?
Blake Griffin.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You want Blake Griffin over Carmelo Anthony?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This unfortunately won't involve Stephen A. Smith, but I do want to actually get this audio played today. Because honestly, like, we've got some Brett Veach audio from Monday that I have wanted to get to for several shows.
I've got some Jalen Rose audio on Kevin Durant.
I also have some thoughts on Bobby Witt Jr. that I do want to get to at some point. But in the intermediate, something happened last night after Suns Lakers, and I still had the game up on my TV at home because I was just sort of basking in the glory of the Suns winning that game even without Devin Booker for most of the second half. And the NBA on TNT, like, Tuesday night crew, which is Dwayne Wade, Candace Parker, and Shaq, and it's emceed by Adam Lefko, I believe.
That sounds right. I don't remember exactly.
That's a person.
That sounds right.
I think it's kind of emceed by Lefko. And honestly, I was watching it last night, and there was this interaction between Shaq and Candace Parker with a little bit of Dwayne Wade sprinkled in there. And it was really awkward to the point that I almost texted somebody who I thought might have been watching, and I thought about tweeting about it, but I'm not trying to, like, blow up a TV show for trying to get its chemistry right. Like, that would be pretty glass house of me.
Not blow it up.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just trying to let everybody...
Blow it up.
Well, I don't want to...
Blow it up.
I don't really want to criticize
blow
a show
it up.
For issues like all blow of the hosts cross-talking too much. Seems like it might be hypocritical. But it was really kind of an awkward interaction. And a couple of these clips got tweeted out again today, and it became a little bit of a story. Last night, I searched Candace Shack to see if people were talking about it on Twitter, and a few people were, but I hadn't really popped off or whatever. But then some of the clips got tweeted out today, and I got two clips of it that we'll hear now from Inside the NBA on TNT last night. This is mostly Shaq and Candace Parker. It was a conversation that was started, I believe, around a corner three that Jokic hit last night. And they're talking about guarding the Nuggets, essentially. And it just got kind of uncomfortable.
I think you switch at the point of pick and roll, but I do think that Jokic, like, the NBA switches now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Why? Whatever happened?
Because everybody can shoot threes.
Whatever happened to man up?
Because you're going to be manning up, trying to recover back to your man, and they're going to hit a three just like Jokic did.
No, but whatever happened to pre-rotating and
then they move the ball around. And
you got 4 to 5 3-point shooters on the court. You ain't going to rotate enough time.
Not rotating. Not rotating.
Yeah, but you got to take the easy pass away. Like, if you ain't going to switch, you got to take the easy
pass. So that's what I'm saying.
But now you have guys that can throw the ball from one side of the court and find the guy in rhythm.
Okay.
But that easy 1-5 pick and roll, the big is so far back like Shaq used to be all the time.
And we won a championship.
But here you go. Just throwing a shot at you, big fella. I love you.
No, but did we win a championship?
We did.
Thank you.
Because you started getting up on the screen.
And if you're not switching, the post players have to get up to the screen so they can recover back quicker to their man.
Right.
So you're right.
If you're higher
you have
up,
to be at
you
the
get
point
back
of attack.
Are we ever going to go back to where we man up and pre-rotate and show and get back?
It's not the game today.
Okay.
Too good of shooters.
Nuggets won the night by 31.
Everybody's not too good of a shooter, Candace. Stop.
You said nobody on the court.
I said everybody's not shooting like that. It's only a couple of teams that shoot to lay it out. Don't look at him. Everybody's not shooting a high percentage from three, Candace.
Let's okay, are we saying everybody in general? Or are
you
we
just
saying the
said,
majority?
You just said.
On the Nuggets, if you pre-rotate, they're going to kill you from the corner three. What did they shoot from the three?
Really?
They shot 11 of 30. So they shot 36%. This is an off night.
Wade just looked at a stat and go, how did she do that math
yeah,
so quickly?
Like, was the number on?
I'm going to be like. That Tennessee math, tell me.
Several things. And you guys, I got three things off the top of my head, and you guys can tell me what jumped out to you. Number one. I feel like Dwayne Wade would be a cool hang. That dude's out here diffusing.
Totally.
I feel like Dwayne Wade is like a master like locker room diffuser guy. Good teammate. Two, the uncomfiest moment is also partially visual because Shaq said whatever he said partway through there, and Candace Parker looks over at Wade and like. There is like a three cut of like her making like three different faces and then ultimately looking at Wade for like him to say something because what Shaq said was clearly like just very old man basketball take.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shaq goes, don't look at him. Don't look at him. I'm talking. Let's talk about it. And that is extreme. That was extremely uncomfortable. And the third thing is that Shaq is just this guy now.
Yeah. So I really love it. And this is a cross sport thing when the old players don't like understand that a sport has changed. So Shaq's last year in the NBA was 2011. In 2011, 11 teams shot over 35% from three. And the year 2020, one. Is it 2020?
Yeah, 2021.
The 2020-21 season, 24 teams do.
Hit me that one more time.
So back in 2011, Shaq's last year in the NBA, 11 teams shot over 35% from three. Fast forward to the 2020-21 season, 24 of them do.
That is a very good little like. Not indictment, but a good example. The other thing is I was trying to figure out who tweeted
worst,
this.
The worst three-point shooting team this year is Houston at 33%. They would finish 24th.
Patrick Claibon, he does TV for NFL Network, I guess, tweeted, Shaq's view of basketball is understandably skewed by a lifetime of being Shaq, which
yes.
also I think yes. comes into play
yeah, yeah,
here.
Yeah. Absolutely matters.
Roger Sherman from The Ringer tweeted, Shaq is a one-man argument that it's possible to be too good at a sport to analyze it well. His only comment about any basketball situation has always been, these players should simply be as good as me, Shaq,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was very good analysis. Beards, what did you think?
Shaq is very... old school big man in terms of,
because he was incredibly good at it.
Well, also because the guys he went up against were incredible.
Yeah,
like he had He had Hakeem. He had David Robinson. He had Alonzo Mourning. He had all of these guys that he was going up against. And watching Kareem and watching Wilt and these guys, and he thinks it should be played this way. Where, remember, he went on and on and on about Dwight Howard for years.
Yes.
And about Dwight Howard doesn't have a post-up game.
Yes.
So that makes him not a good center. It got in Dwight's head and literally ruined some of his career for that. And where he was saying Andrew Bynum is better than Dwight Howard and all of this stuff. Shaq is also very, very petty.
Yes.
This is going to be, I'm going to say something that will make both of you just roll your eyes.
I'm gonna go ahead. You know what, Beards? I'm gonna pre-roll my eyes.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna pre-roll my eyes to make Shaq happy. Yeah. I'm gonna pre-roll. Go ahead.
I've been rolling my eyes this whole time, so it's fine.
NBA TV does that series called Open Court where they have Ernie Johnson and a bunch of old NBA guys talk.
Yeah.
And I was watching one recently.
My eyes are pre-rotating right
That's
now.
Fine.
Crazy.
And I was watching one recently where it was they were talking about that list of the 50 greatest players that the NBA did in 1997, and they were adding 10 more guys to that list, and they were doing it unanimously. Like, everybody had to vote this guy in.
Okay.
And Shaq was on that, and it was a whole bunch of other people. And somebody brought up Steve Nash. And Shaq was incensed that Steve Nash be voted in on that list because he stole an MVP from Shaq, in his view. Shaq's very petty.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, God, he hates Steve Nash for this. Because he only won one, and Steve Nash won two. But Shaq's a very old school, not quite old man yells at clouds, but he's got a little bit of that in him.
We played that Donovan Mitchell sound. That man was yelling at a cloud.
That's true. But also, the one thing from that clip, his default argument for whenever thinks he's wrong is,
well, did we win a championship?
Yes.
But how many rings have I got? How many rings did he win?
That's what Shaq goes to.
I wasn't expecting you to have a Shaq impression.
I didn't either.
The thing that always annoys me with this is, like, it's all right to acknowledge that sports have changed.
I'm sorry. I just was so surprised to see Beards open his mouth. And out of there was
how many championships are we going to win?
I just didn't expect that.
Did we win a championship?
Also, I want to point out, Dwayne Wade's the reason he won that championship.
Yes.
I looked at stats because I was like, Dwayne Wade averaged like 37 points a game in that series. Shaq averaged 13.
The other thing that both of you have mentioned on some level is, like, you know, it's Shaq analyzing basketball as Shaq, which is very understandable. But also,
he's been bad this year, though.
He has.
Yeah.
He has.
He's had a handful of just, like, what?
But the thing about it is that, like, and this might be faint praise, and this might be a bad example, I don't know. But I'll use Barkley. Like, it seems like Charles Barkley played basketball as Charles Barkley.
Yes.
And longer ago than Shaq. I feel like there's at least, in large part, an attempt to have an understanding of what basketball looks like now. Because he's, like, for Shaq or Barkley, both, they are on TV as analysts for basketball in 2021.
Somewhat, Barkley will still kind of default somewhat
totally.
to the jump shooting teams don't win championships.
Right.
All teams now are jump shooting teams.
Right.
Yeah. One of the differences is, like, Barkley doesn't like the modern NBA, but acknowledges that its existence. Whereas Shaq,
I think that's probably
doesn't
fair.
Think that it exists. And yeah,
I think that's reasonable. And that's what I'm really splitting hairs on those guys, just because they're both. They might be at this point the two faces of NBA analysis right now, which is kind of on like a national studio show kind of
might be scary.
Level.
I don't know if that's good or not.
I don't know either. The other thing was just like Shaq. This is me being very media minded more than basketball minded. Shaq was being a bad teammate there. Like, he was not advancing the conversation. Candace Parker was trying. And also, she was good over the course of the whole show. I had not seen her do... I have not watched a whole lot of studio shows. I don't know if she's a permanent part of the crew.
I think she rotates in.
Does she pre-rotate in, or...
You can't do that now.
Okay. Why?
It'll kill you on the corner three.
Just gotta stop the easy pass.
But how many rings?
Beards, can you just say... I don't want to give you too much. I don't want to give you the whole "this is almost entirely sports." Just give me a "let's take a break" as Shaq, and then we can take a break.
Ooh.
How many breaks we got left?
No, I need you to say "let's take a break."
Let's take a break. How many rings?
bitch, hit the button.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Hey, listen, I think the Big 12 made the right decision, but for him to be like in
They're getting paid an education out there, gosh darn it.
They're just out there trying to earn an education. Frankly, they might be overpaid. Why am I Bill Clinton?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Did we win a championship, Dwayne? Did we not get a ring? I'm just saying. Everybody can't shoot the three.
God, I hate those arguments so much.
Rings. I don't know if we talked about this as the news was broken as it happened, but it's something we very much need to address here on the show and that we need to that needs to be made relevant. We need to kind of get our take in on it first, I think. I'll show you both the picture once more.
Yes.
As Taco Bell's entry into the chicken wars. Beard's like, if I would have been a good host, I would have given you enough notice to put on the
Twitch.
Absolutely. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We don't have time. But
all in.
It is fried chicken.
Let's go.
With what appears to be some sort of like maybe their chipotle kind of mayo sauce.
Yes.
One of them's got pickled jalapenos on it.
Give me five.
And it's in basically a burger.
Maybe 10.
It may be like a biscuit kind of wrap. But it's in a taco shape.
All day, every day.
And so it's vertical. And they're calling it the crispy chicken sandwich taco.
Oh, boy.
We're gonna crush a bunch of these, right?
Is it out yet?
I don't know. I haven't gotten, I have not double checked on that.
I want it.
This Thrillist article does not land. It's landing in 2021 like a meteor hitting Earth and wiping out all life.
I meant to say this earlier. James Harden's already second in Nets history in triple doubles.
Still has more free throws made than field goals for his career.
March 11th for the chicken taco sandwich. Is this chicken sandwich a taco? This one is, right?
Yes.
This one actually may have solved everything. No show tomorrow night. KU UTEP on 810. We'll be back after that. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.